Hello everyone, welcome to the Icelandic Roots podcast. My name is Jack, and in this episode, Owen and myself interviewed Curtis Olafsson about genetic mutations prevalent within Icelandic genes, as well as other health information relating to the Icelandic population. But we also delve into Curtis's connections to Iceland and his role within the North Dakota Icelandic Club Community Association, of which he has deep roots. Hope you enjoy this podcast, and as always, thank you for tuning in. Okay, well, first of all, thank you, Curtis, very much for agreeing to do the podcast with us. And in this episode, we are going to discuss things relating to the article that you shared on Icelandic Roots about the Icelandic cancer-related gene mutation. And so maybe you can just get us started out by describing that and sharing some of the information as it pertains to the article.
Yeah. Well, I want to start by saying that what really got my attention about this gene mutation was, and I know both of you are very familiar with my niece, Sunna Firstno, and she rode back from Iceland on a flight with Dr. Elton Sartor from Mayo Clinic, and he is one of the leading researchers on this gene mutation. And what I really found concerning was the fact that neither Sunna nor I had ever heard of this gene mutation. And I'm, as president of the Icelandic Communities Association in Mountain, North Dakota for many years, I'm pretty well connected into the Icelandic community on a broad basis, but not to the degree that Sunna is. And also, she is a registered nurse by profession. I'm a retired cattle rancher with a degree in animal science. Neither one of us had ever heard of this gene mutation. And that tells both Sunna and I that there has to be tens of thousands of people of Icelandic descent in North America who also have never heard of it. And so as I start out in the article that I drafted as a public service, this article has been drafted to raise awareness regarding a gene mutation that is known to exist in the population of people of Icelandic descent. I think it's important for people to know about this, and if they have a significant incidence of several types of cancer in their families, they really should consider seeking counseling from a genetic counselor and get a professional recommendation on whether and how to get tested. And the reason this is important is because you can, there are some things you can do to avoid these cancers that could be affiliated with the gene mutation. There's actually two gene mutations. There's CDKN2A. And people who have that mutation have a significantly elevated risk of developing melanoma, pancreatic cancer, and possibly other cancers, including head and neck cancers. And this mutation, and listen to these numbers, this is interesting. This mutation is found in 10 to 25% of families with multiple cases of melanoma. And it's only found in one out of 1,250 Icelandic individuals without a diagnosis of melanoma. So what this tells you is if you carry this gene mutation, you've got a significantly elevated risk of these types of cancers. The other gene mutation is called BRCA2. And people who have that mutation have a significantly elevated risk of breast, ovarian, pancreatic, and prostate cancer. So it's important for people to know about these mutations and look at their family history and any somewhat closely related family members that may have been diagnosed with any of these types of cancers. If you've got two or three people in your family that have been diagnosed with these, you know, extended family, I'm talking, you know, not only siblings, but first and second, third cousins. If you've got a significant incidence of cancer in your family, you really should talk to a genetic counselor. And And just to share a little bit of my personal journey on this, I was well aware of a significant incident of cancer in my family, so I did get tested at Mayo Clinic. And the only thing that would have shocked me would have been if the tests had come back negative. And it, of course, it came back positive for the one mutation, which is associated with an elevated risk of melanoma, which I was diagnosed with malignant melanoma in 1999. But it takes more than, you know, a little bit of melanoma to kill a tough Icelander, so I'm still around. but I do an annual screening for that. And now I did test negative for the other mutation, the BRCA2. And yet that is the one that is produces a significant elevated risk of prostate cancer, which I've also been diagnosed with. And there's a significant family. This is the one that really concerns me. I think I'll be fine going forward as a result with melanoma or prostate cancer, because I've been treated for both and I'm being regularly screened for both. But the one that concerns me is pancreatic cancer, because there's a significant incidence of that in my family. And that is a very deadly cancer, because so many people, you get diagnosed with that, it's often a death sentence. And so it's critical to get tested and know if you have a significantly elevated risk. Another interesting thing that came about as a result of me being tested was that I tested heterozygous for the gene mutation, and I put my animal science degree to work and knew that then, having tested heterozygous, that means that the gene mutation could only come from one of my parents, not both. Had I tested homozygous, then it would have come from both. But I tested heterozygous. And the reason that is significant is in my particular family, the incidence of cancer is, well, pretty much exclusively on my dad's side. So that has to be where it comes from. It correlates to the incidence of cancer on his side of the family. And another reason that it's critical information to know whether you test heterozygous or homozygous, if you test heterozygous as I did, then your children should still be tested. Your siblings should be tested. Even though it's possible, there's a 50-50 chance that if a person who tests positive could still have test negative, I should say. Mm. An individual that tests negative and tests heterozygous but negative could still have a sibling that is carrying the gene mutation.
Right, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now had I tested homozygous and tested negative, then my siblings could expect the same result, and my children.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. But, and see, even though I tested heterozygous, it's still necessary for my children to be tested. Mm-hmm. So it is very interesting. And again, the fact that
yes,
neither Sunna nor I had ever heard of this before, I think is very significant and very concerning.
Yes, and thank you for starting with that, because that was going to be a question of mine, is what piqued your interest so much about this specifically. And I think that is just a great point. It might be quite safe to say that Sunna worldwide is maybe one of the most connected to, you know, the Icelandic people and the Icelandic people in North America. And you're quite right.
Exactly.
If this is something that she's not familiar with, then this certainly is not probably widely known information.
Right. And that's the concern. And she's not only extremely well connected, as you alluded to. I don't know of anybody who's better connected throughout the Icelandic community, yes, both in Iceland and here in North America, mm-hmm, when you take it all in its totality. Mm-hmm. And also, as a registered nurse, she pays very close attention to health-related, mm-hmm, issues.
It may, in my mind, speak to like a more broad sort of, I guess you could call it an issue. And I think it's just that as much as the genetic sciences have advanced, a lot of this still is not either widely known to the general populace or also as easy as it is in terms of costs and ease of use to get your genome sequenced and to do these sorts of things. It's still not widely done. And, you know, you're speaking today with two guys in our mid-20s. And as much as, well, I will say that I've always kind of thought about, you know, going to doctors at this age, there's a lot that we don't screen for because it's not, you know, you're not often at a risk at our age. But I've often thought that the ease of being able to do genetic testing and these sorts of things, that it couldn't hurt. And you mentioned things like pancreatic cancer and things not being recognized until they're often in late stages. And well, I hope that as we advance scientifically and technologically, that it becomes more easy for younger folks too, to be able to figure out their risk factors so that you can do things at a much earlier stage in your life.
Exactly. And again, I want to emphasize, I can't overemphasize this. Without respect to what your age is, look around at your family, and if you've got a significant number of cases of these types of cancers that are mentioned in my article, you really should go see a genetic counselor. That's, as I mentioned in my article, the first step is to meet with a certified genetic counselor to get a professional recommendation on whether and how to get tested. And again, what should trip everyone's triggers is when you see a significant number of people in your family having these types of cancers that are affiliated with these gene mutations.
Yes, and you've mentioned this a couple times now with genetic counselors. And so it sounds like maybe you've had personal experience meeting with one. Could you explain a bit more about what a genetic counselor is and what that process is like?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I did meet with a certified genetic counselor at Mayo Clinic, and we spent quite a bit of time. I had gathered together as much of my family-related incidents of cancer that I could, and so we went through all of that. I'm not aware of the incidence of cancer when you get too many generations or too many cousins, too many generations and relationship differences. But that's what we went over. We went over all of the individuals that I knew and how they were related to me. So that's the type of thing we went over.
Okay. And it was from that, then did you, do genome sequencing?
Yeah, that's when I took the test came from Ambry Genetics Laboratory is where the test was sent. And that's a simple blood draw. So it's not anything that people are not already used to.
Right, certainly. And was that, again, looking specifically for these sorts of mutations, or did it give you other information too? Or
yeah, it was tested for these two mutations. And then when you read the report of the test results, mm-hmm, and even more so when you read the scientific research studies that have been done on this, mm-hmm, it is so complex. I mean, you unless you're a clinical researcher, uh-huh, you're going to be thinking, "What? I'm not understanding this gobbledygook. I've got a degree in animal science. I'm used to reading research studies, but this stuff is so complex and has so many moving parts, and there's terminology in there that I'm not familiar with. And this is why. And I say all of that not to illustrate my own lack of knowledge, but to emphasize how important it is for you to be seen by a certified genetic counselor, because they are the ones who understand these mutations and the risks affiliated with them far better than even someone with a scientific background.
Well, and I'll make a analogy here to genealogy. And looking over genealogy charts, like what you can do through us Icelandic roots, a lot of that can really go over your head unless you have someone like Suna or like, you know, very much more understanding genealogy to explain certain things to you. But I think that's probably even more so with genetics and the different information from that. Like you said, it can get very complex.
Yeah, well, and Icelandic Roots is a fabulous resource for anybody of Icelandic descent. And anybody who's listening to this podcast, if you're not a member of Icelandic Roots, you should become a member. And, you know, when you talk about the family charts and relationships, that I find to be pretty easy to understand because I'm a retired registered cattle breeder, so I'm used to reading pedigrees.
Oh, fair enough. That'll definitely do and connect it. And just to add to that genealogical side, it was interesting reading through for the CDKN2A region. You folks were able to trace it back to a common ancestor being a female who lived in Húnavatnssýsla, county in Northern Iceland. That's very interesting. So that would have kind of been the start of that variation happening, right?
That's what that research paper says, yes. And so it had to start somewhere, and it seems like they've been able to identify where it started. And I don't know who the individual is. It's irrelevant at this point, but in one sense, I kind of wish we did know who the individual was, because then we could look on Icelandic Roots and figure out, are we a descendant of this person?
Oh, exactly. There's got to be somewhere down the line that connects that all the way down the tree, right?
Yeah. And they've identified everyone that they've identified with the CDKN2A, they've identified as being related to this original person. And, you know, genetic mutations happen all the time in the human world and in the animal kingdom. This happens all the time. You know,
interesting.
The pole gene in cattle, it was originally a genetic mutation, and it was a good one because you don't have to deal with dehorning cattle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Genetic mutations are, of course, not always for the bad side of things. There's a lot of beneficial genetic mutations that
there can be. Yeah, in this case, that's not the case, but.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, it's interesting to think about as well. Again, it would be total speculation on this side of it, but just with this common ancestor being in the north of Iceland, I wonder at all if the environmental factors of maybe not necessarily being around that direct sunlight closer to the equator had anything to do with the melanoma side of that and kind of absorbing that vitamin D and the UV rays differently, or if something would have came. But again, that's really more speculative than anything else.
Yeah, well, I think environment is not totally disconnected from the genetic component of it. When I was diagnosed with malignant melanoma, and of course all of my ancestors came from the north, but when I was diagnosed, the dermatologist said to me, "You have as little pigmentation in your skin as you can possibly have without being albino."
Yeah, that's Icelandic for you.
Well, that's my Icelandic heritage coming back to haunt me.
No kidding. That's definitely a connection there.
So yeah, when I go outside, I have to stay lathered up with sunscreen and stay out of the sun as much as I can.
And I find it interesting too. Yeah, just to circle back once again, it's a cool kind of crossover with genetics and genealogy. And it's not something that you often think of learning your heritage or looking at these genealogy charts, but there's a lot of health information embedded in that too. And it's neat when you can pull that information out as well. And I think another factor to why it can be so relevant and interesting with tracing your genealogy, but then also the fact they're too in Iceland that they are so focused on genealogy and have all these charts and know who's related to who all the way back. And then, of course, today there is a lot more genetic testing going on in Iceland. And I would imagine that's more so than most other populations in the world, that people with Icelandic heritage or living in Iceland maybe have a bit more of the whole picture understanding. I don't know if that's exactly how genetics works, but if you have a more relatively isolated population, I'm wondering if it's easier to find out genetic information on those people too.
Well, exactly. I don't think there's a question about that. Mm-hmm. They have the advantage of having all of this genealogy information and being able to correlate it with what's happening as it relates to genetic related diseases. So it's pretty much the perfect population to make a lot of correlations.
Certainly, but it's only useful if you use it. And like you said, once again, it's only relevant if you are aware of the information and know what to look for.
Right.
Yes, wonderful. Well, is there any other points you would like to discuss relating to that, or any other messages you would like to provide to the audience listening in?
Well, I'm going to continue working with Mayo Clinic on assessing my risk, mm-hmm. and I'm in the very early stages of it and still have a lot to learn about what the implications of it are going forward in terms of screenings and doing things to help minimize my risk. excuse me. None of these mutations are known to produce sneezing as far as I know, but I believe that having this positive test result for the mutation will put me in a place where I can qualify for some types of screening to and the one that I'm most concerned about, of course, is because I've already had a couple of these, but I'm concerned about the pancreatic cancer. And there is a screening process that can be done for that. So I think I'm going to have that done, given the significant incidence of it in my family.
Yeah, that's one that's always made me concerned, too. And, you know, there's been many noteworthy people, even if it's not a direct family relation. That's one that's gotten some really noteworthy people that I've, you know, followed in life or just read books about. Pancreatic cancer is quite a worrying one.
Yep, it is.
Absolutely. And very much, very commendable on all that you're doing. Obviously, you're on your own journey to kind of find this stuff out, but it's inspiring to hear that you want to get this information out to so many other people, because as you've said, it definitely is an important factor. And I know for myself, just speaking about it, when Jason had come to us with kind of this whole concept, this was entirely new to me. It's certainly not something that I've seen. So I think even just for myself, and I hope for other people listening, that just by kind of hearing about this, it might spur a conversation to have with other Icelanders in the community and maybe finally make that a talking point, because it's definitely one we want to push across.
Yeah, and I've sent this draft to the Lerigberg paper in Winnipeg, so I know it's going to be published there. And when I get time, I'm considering sending this article to as many of the Icelandic clubs in the U.S. and in Canada as I can. A lot of them have newsletters or email chains, and I think the more we can do to get this information out there, the more helpful it might be. You know, you never know. We might save some lives by getting that information out there, and that would be the goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, that totally is the goal. And yeah, if you can even save one, that's going to make the difference there. So hopefully, absolutely, people pick it up and start moving it around, because it's incredible information to have.
Because I think this is kind of what we're doing right now, and also sharing articles and things of that nature online, I think, is using the internet to its best way. And then what you're doing yourself, I often think that if people are pursuing something in their own health journey or something health related in their personal lives, being able to share what they're learning about themselves with, you know, with other people through the internet or through publications, I think that's very important. And you're not just keeping the information that you're learning to yourself, but you're sharing it in a way that other people can learn from.
Right. And I don't have any hesitation about doing that, about talking about my test result, my cancer diagnoses. I'm not doing that at all to draw attention to myself. I'm doing it because I think it's important to share that here's why this journey is important to me and why I want to get the information out there. I've been personally affected by it.
Yeah, and that just seems to be who you are as a person, just getting to know you over this short conversation, but you seem very community oriented. So if we do have a bit of time with you still, maybe you could just talk a bit about your connection to the Icelandic community and the work that you've done in Mountain and any other organizations and that sort of thing. Just talking about the Icelandic community, if we have some time here.
Sure. Yeah, well, I've been involved with the Icelandic Communities Association in Mountain for decades. And I'm very proud of what our small town achieves with our Deuce of August Icelandic celebration. This year, we are celebrating our 125th annual celebration. And we have a town that on a normal day has about 70 people in it. And during the weekend, we host thousands of people from all over the U.S. and Canada and Iceland. We always have guests there from Iceland. And I'm obnoxiously proud of the fact that I'm of pure Icelandic descent. All of my ancestors came from Iceland. Three of my four grandparents came from Iceland, and the fourth was born here in North Dakota shortly after her parents got here. So it's being involved in my heritage in the way that I am is really been an important part of my life. I have been to Iceland 8 times. I went so often that I ended up married to a lady from Iceland. Unfortunately, she passed away in June of 2021 after a tough 7-year battle with cancer. That's another reason why the issue of cancer is important to me.
Yeah. Okay. I'm very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I hope to get down to one of the Deuces there at some point. I've grown up in Gimli, so I've been to the Icelandic Festival many times and have heard good things from Sierra, one of our Snorris there from Mountain. And she talks up the Deuce just like it's the Icelandic Festival here. So I'd love to get down there and experience the another North American Icelandic culture anyway. I think it would be a really, really cool
time. Sure, absolutely. And so that's our biggest event of the year, but we also have an annual Thorablót. I think this will be about our 12th or 14th, something like that. So that's coming up on February 24th. So, yeah. So we serve a lot of traditional Icelandic foods. We make our own hungakit and rúllupylsa.
Oh, awesome.
We use the recipe of a community member who was for decades the community butcher. So Björn Olgersson, it doesn't get more Icelandic than that. We use his recipe for the hungakit and rúllupylsa, and it's just like I remember when I was a small kid.
Oh, good
and
stuff.
It's really a treat, and then we're working on trying to get some other foods from Iceland over, including svið. That's always a big hit, and we have an Icelander from up in Canada that came down one year, and he showed everybody the coup de grace when you're eating svið is to pluck out the eyeball and eat that.
Oh yeah, that's a new one.
Yeah.
I was going to say too. You always know when the rúllupylsa is starting to cook because the whole house starts to smell just like the lamb too, eh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I had different Christmas gatherings with both of my two children, and I told them both that we'll boil the rúllupylsa on your grill so that we don't smell up the house. so they were happy. Well, they wouldn't care, but I thought their spouses might. So I was at my daughter's cooking the boiling the rula pilsa when my son-in-law came out in the garage where I had the grill running, and he stepped out of the kitchen into the garage and he said, "Man, it smells good in here."
Oh,
I said, "Oh, good to know that. Next year we'll boil the rula pilsa in the house."
Yeah, exactly. If they like the smell, then bonus.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, it's really been a great thing that now people are traveling a lot more. You know, when I was a kid growing up, you didn't have any guests from Iceland. People just didn't travel that much. And then that all changed in the 90s. And one of the things that really lit a spark to our celebration was at our 100th celebration in 1999, the former president, Olav Ragnar Grimson, came to the event, and he was just so phenomenal. It lit a spark that's still burning today. And by the way, when I mention Olav Ragnar, that is how I met my wife in Iceland. A group of us were there for a tourism conference, actually. We were sent over there by the North Dakota Tourism Department. And then as part of our visit, there were about five of us that were in our group that were invited to Bessastaðir to have lunch with Olav Ragnar. And I've been to the White House in Washington, D.C. for an interview, and you go through a very complex security screening. When you go to Bessastaðir, you just go up and ring the doorbell. So I did that, and my wife answers the door. And never seen her before, and I was immediately totally smitten. And then she took us in to meet Olav Ragnar and have a cup of coffee, and then we went from there into the dining room and had a fabulous lunch, and she helped serve that with such grace and elegance. And we were actually on our way to the airport to come back home when this took place, when this luncheon took place. So, like I say, I was totally smitten, and I had certainly paid attention to her, and she totally ignored me. So I had to do something about that. So I called the president's personal secretary and made an inquiry as to whether this beautiful lady who answered the door 2 weeks prior, is there a way that I could make my interest in her known, and might she be available? And she said, "I'll check into that for you, sir." So that told me right there, yeah, she's available. And here's the funny part. Here's the funny part of the story. And keep in mind that my wife learned, because this is an important part of the story, my wife learned English from a British English speaker. So the president's personal secretary goes to my wife and said, "You remember that guy from North Dakota that was here 2 weeks ago leading that group, the tall blonde-haired guy?" And my wife said, "Yeah, kind of." And the secretary said, "Well, he called the other day." My wife said, "Well, what did he want?" And the secretary said, "He wants your phone number." And my wife said, and she was very feisty, Viking lady, my wife said, "Let me get this straight. You want to give my phone number to some bloody American? I don't think so. Give him my cell phone, give him my email address, and then if I don't like what he says, I'll just hit delete." And so
that's how that got started. Battle up there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, incredible. What a beautiful story of how to meet.
Yeah, and then we dated long distance, and then we agreed that she should come to North Dakota and to get to know each other better. And her friends thought she was absolutely out of her mind. "You're going to North Dakota basically on a blind date with some dude you don't even know. What if he turns out to be a jerk?" And she said, and she had planned to come for 3 weeks, you know. And so she's told her friends, "Well, I'll just take a bus to Minneapolis, check into a hotel, and read some books I brought along.
She had a backup plan just in case, eh?
Yeah. So
another Icelandic thing too, traveling with books.
Yeah. So we dated and traveled back and forth for the next several months, and we were married on July 31st of 2004 and where else would two Icelanders get married? But at the Deuce of August Icelandic celebration after the evening supper.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Perfect timing.
So, yeah, my connections to Iceland are extensive.
Yes. Yeah, wonderful to hear. And, yeah, I personally learned about Mountain, North Dakota, from Sierra. As Owen mentioned, we went with Snorri with her, and then I was with her last summer in Hofsós. And it's, sounds like a great place, and I would very much like to visit. And it's interesting. Let me try to think here. Yeah, okay. This was at Hofsós at the museum there where I was last summer. And someone was asking me, you know, some of the areas where the Icelanders went to in the United States. And I mentioned Mountain, North Dakota as one of them. And then the person kind of paused and looked at me funny. And they were like, yeah, I don't know if there's many mountains in North Dakota. I said, no, that's the name of the town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's on the first hill out of the Red River Valley. And as it happens, my farm and ranch headquarters is also on that same hill. We're about 4 or 5 miles from Mountain, but this ridge runs at an angle over to where our farm and ranch is. Mm. So when Björk came to North Dakota, I told her that my house is on a hill. And she got there, and she got there after dark. And the next morning, she gets up and looks out the window and said, I thought you said your house was on a hill. And I said, well, yeah, it is. And see, it's only about a 50-foot rise in the ground. I said, yeah, it is. She said, this isn't a hill. It's a bump. And then after she'd been in North Dakota for a while, then people were asking her, well, what do you think of North Dakota? And she said, it's flat and square.
I guess, too, that's a new concept for them driving around like quarter sections, too, right? Like Iceland doesn't really have quarters marked out. So driving around and having squares be everywhere, I'm sure would probably be a crazy concept at first.
Right. Yeah, there aren't too many straight roads in Iceland.
No, that's right.
Yeah. I was in Iceland on my last trip in May, and actually my stepson was throwing a 40th birthday party bash for himself. So I called his sister, who lives in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I said, "Say, I see your brother is throwing a birthday bash for himself for his 40th birthday." And she said, "Yeah, I saw that too." And I said, "Well, we're going." And she said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Figure out when you can go and I'll get the tickets and we're going." So we did and had a great time over there. But I also was able to have some business meetings related to the joint venture technology marketing company that I'm involved in. So I met with several longtime friends over there, Geir Horda and Hjalmar Hannesson and some others, met with some representatives of a couple of scientific companies over there. So the technology that I'm working in is indoor air pathogen eradication technology. And we're with a brand new company that's really come out with a breakthrough technology. And one of the things it will do is eradicate black mold. And one of the most interesting things I learned over there was there are several schools over there that they've had to vacate just because of black mold infestation. So I'm going to continue to work with people over there because I think we can help them salvage those buildings. Also, the National Energy Company had the same problem. They had to vacate their, I forget the name of the company right off the top of my head, but they had to vacate their headquarters building because that became infested with black mold. So it's a significant problem over there. So
yeah, fascinating. I'm going to try to remember in Hofsós, the school there they had issues with the building, and I think it was that. I think it was mold problem.
I was just going to say, actually, probably. Same for me. That's an incredible breakthrough for you guys, because I remember as well my home state in Mosfellsbyer, just north of Reykjavik. The school there, same thing. They said they had to find an alternate location for it or something like that. And yeah, it was black mold as well. So that could be a big breakthrough. That's incredible.
Yeah. It's this new company. It's my joint venture partner and I are authorized distributors for this new startup company. And it's the best part of it is this company is a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company.
Very cool.
So this company has the resources to do whatever they want to do.
You guys got the ammunition.
Yeah. So I hope to be going over to Iceland again pretty soon. We're waiting right now on our European Union CE certification because we can't, our technology can't be imported into Iceland without that. So I'm waiting on that. And then when we get that, then I want to try to put together a research study to demonstrate that our technology can salvage those buildings and make them usable again.
Absolutely. No, that'd be huge. It would obviously totally be a much better option to save these buildings and start from scratch and potentially have it happen again too, right?
Yeah. And you know, I liken the work I'm doing there with this new technology to the work I'm doing and trying to get the information out about this gene mutation. I like to go out and make money, but I also like to be involved in things that can actually help people. And if we can salvage some school buildings in Iceland and some business headquarters, then that's something to feel pretty good about without having them go to the expense of tearing a building down and building a new one.
Right, certainly. And that directly relates to health as well. And that's something,
right?
I think, too, just like the genetics testing and understanding that in terms of your health, that's kind of an emerging science is the impact of molds and how often I think we have no awareness of how mold may be in a building or in our homes and affecting our health. So that's very interesting to tie that into this podcast as well, something that I think people could, you know, do some more research on and think more about as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd be happy to send you guys some basic information on this technology. And you're right that, you know, it poses significant health risks, and you may not even realize that it exists in a building, but it, that Aspergillus is a nasty spore. And we just completed a research study on our technology relating to black mold, and the results were phenomenal. It eradicated 99.99% plus of Aspergillus spores in 1 hour in an independent laboratory test.
Wow, that's incredibly efficient and fast too, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's not like it has to run you do want it to run continuously to keep it from coming back.
Yeah, of course, that's the key.
Yeah.
No, absolutely, very cool. Please, if you're willing to share, that's certainly something I would be. I'm sure Jack as well would be very, very excited to learn about.
Yeah, and we could also share a link if there's a paper or something that we could share in the description of the podcast that people could go read as well if they're also interested.
Yeah, I can send you links to that and some documents. Sure. And again, that's a lot like this gene mutation. It's highly complex. It's very technical, but the basics of that are easier to understand than the gene mutation. So,
this is also something we're going to plan to do more podcasts with is understanding genetics and shedding some more light on, you know, for a variety of things. I think there's also the fascinating component of overlapping that information with genealogy too. And tracing your family tree through genetics as well. If you're someone like myself, where the Icelandic side is on my mother's side, and then my dad's side is all hodgepodge of different European ancestry, that without something like tracing your lineage through genetics, there's really disconnected family trees on that side. So yeah, we're going to continue to pursue this information, and hopefully we can all learn more about this together and have a better understanding.
Yeah.
And you've done a great job today at describing the genetic side. I felt like the way you put it is enough that I can visualize it. I feel like if it got a little more scientific on me, I might get my wires crossed.
Yeah. And you know, in this article, I decided not to go into the various nuances and what the ramifications are of testing heterozygous as versus homozygous, because that's something that, unless you've had, you know, some type of genetic training, and I have, of course, in the cattle business, but unless you've had some type of genetic training, that's probably information that would tend to confuse people rather than enlighten them.
Absolutely. But yeah, unless you have any other further closing comments, I just wanted to say thank you again for taking this Sunday evening. And I know thanks again for working with us there too. I was telling Jack, I was out at the cabin out by the Ontario border here in Manitoba, and we were driving down a hill with the driveway, and then my friend going to leave today tried to drive up, and all the ice just had him slide right back down, and he planted in the ditch. So we ended up staying at the cottage for a couple hours extra today. So thanks again.
Yeah, this was no problem.
Jack, anything from your side there as well to close it off?
I would just say thank you again very much, Curtis, and I hope the folks listening in have learned a lot and given them something to think about as well.
Yeah, well, I appreciate everybody who's listening in, and again, pay close attention to the incidence of these cancers that are mentioned in this article in your family, and if you've got a significant number of them, I would encourage people to get connected up with a certified genetic counselor. That's the best way to get started.
Very good advice. Thank you very much again, Curtis.
You're welcome. Thank you for all you guys are doing.
Thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and found it useful and informative, please consider sharing this around with your friends and family. Whether or not they are of Icelandic descent, this sort of information is very important to think about and consider as it pertains to your health and the health of your loved ones. So you can share this episode on Facebook, on Instagram, any of these sorts of platforms, also word of mouth as well. And if you know someone personally who doesn't listen to podcasts, you can maybe show them how to listen to podcasts. It's still a relatively new technology that, we all have access to on our phones and our computers, but are not always using to our fullest advantage. So once again, thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Icelandic Roots Podcast.